Up again here just momentarily. So I'd ask you to finish up your conversations, please.
Oh, dear.
And please go ahead and start taking your seats, and we'll just start up in just a couple of minutes here. So thank you. So we're going to start now. So if folks could take your seats. And again, this is Julie Hedlund, and we have the DNSSEC workshop here today. And we are now starting up with our next panel. This is a panel discussion on DNSSEC automation. And I'll go ahead and turn things over to Russ Mundy from Parsons, who will be moderating the session. Thank you.
Great, thanks. And Paul, if you could start our clock, that would be wonderful. We have a panel on DNSSEC automation, and we have a set of different activities that we're going to talk about today. We're going to go ahead and jump right into it, and I believe Everhart Lisi is our first presenter. And Everhart, why don't you just go ahead.
Thank you very much. It's quite a pleasure to be able to talk to some real people and not having to have this nonsense with the accountability all day long. Last time in Singapore at Tech Day, Diego Espinosa from Costa Rica and I, we presented our work that we've been doing on smart card, and we managed to get smart card HSM to sign. We managed to get the keys into the smart card. We managed to get this working, but now how to put it into production. Turns out these things are not as easy as it looked from the outside. Just for completeness sake, I have a few introductory slides. You all know this. This is more geared to the starter end of the spectrum. Probably not represented here, but I think it's always good not only to hear from those, but also to hear some failures and what we think is causing these things to fail. We can learn from failures almost as much as from successes. As we all know, DNSSEC is very easy. Yeah, it's easy to do. It's easy to fail. Question is if DNSSEC actually secure? Lots of people are saying it's not. It is. Doesn't really matter. It's a standard, so as far as I'm concerned, as long as it's the standard, I will try to support it, and I will also try to encourage other smaller ccTLDs or TLDs to do it. The big hamper is the expense. My ccTLD would be able to afford three HSMs at 10,000 US a pop, but at the moment, the cheapest offer we have is 20,000 US a pop. That makes it a little bit much. So we wonder whether there isn't a cheaper, easy, off-the-shelf solution that is secure, in other words, hardware-based, it's cheap, that we can use for small TLDs, but also for users. Why must a small company, internet-related computer support, science, ISP, or whatever, why must they buy an expensive machine if they could sign their own domain in hardware? The way this is also for completeness sake, the registry system has a database. The database throws out bind tables. They get signed. At the moment, the two common methods are using bind DNS sign zone or open DNSSEC. Or if you really want to be courageous, you put both together, and if you then turn the automation on both sides, you get very interesting results and surprising results. And then, after the zone is signed, it updates the serial, and it loads it we basically sign it on a stealth server, load it on the OpenMaster, and I think it's easier to handle if you have two separate things. Our top level is basically signed. .na is basically signed with a software key. We have a shell script that monitors every single step and squeals if something happens, and then SCPs it to our primary with a serial number on the file. So if we have a problem, we can walk back several steps. We keep at least 20, 30 generations of the file, and we have a lot of checks in, so that doesn't work. But still, you want to have a hardware key, because if the key remains in software, that is a security issue. Diego Espinosa has done some interesting work with Reclam about using a TPM on chip on the hardware to use it for signing. You can use the HSM. You can use a smart card HSM, which costs you $20. And if you flirt with the guy, they give you 10% discount and put the presentation from TechDay Singapore on their website. Card readers, there is a number. You get one for $10 at a bank in Costa Rica, and you can get one for $20 at any decent vendor of your choice. But there are some issues with that are not related to the card. There is many brands. Currently, I like most the German one. Has something to do with my cultural heritage, perhaps, but maybe German engineering. On the PDF, every link that is clickable is in blue, so if you download it, you want to have the address of their website or the address of an email of one of the protagonists involved here, then you don't have to ask me about it. That works quite well on Linux and on OS X. Rick Lam did excellent work on creating a DVD which is has a complete bootable system to do this. Diego and I took this and adapted it to work with a little graphical or semi-graphical front end on the Macintosh. Basically, it's important to see the work that he done and pick that apart. You can have a flexible number of crypto officers. In other words, if you need to clone the card, you have at least two or three people being present. So all the security measures are there. It signs in the card. It can do, if you have the key. Size big enough, it can do about 7,200 per hour. If I needed more, I could increase my reload time to 2. If I could really had a problem, I could then have 2 cards. And if it really, really, really started a problem, I would probably have enough clients to buy me a proper HSM. DNS Zone works very well with the software key. This is absolutely rock solid since 2009. We have never had an issue. The key has to be on the system. Our system is credit card compliable, so we have really tried to plug every hole we can find. We have several security services probing the system, and any hole they find, which is really rare, we plug immediately. So I am fairly confident that for the time being we can carry on like it, especially since we don't have clients. In order to use it on the smart card system, it requires a patch. Reclam has written the patch. It works well, but the patch has not been accepted by ISC into their standard tree, which means it doesn't go into the repositories. There are technical issues that day, and logistical issues, and sort of political issues, which I accept, actually, but in the end, It's not possible for me to run this in production, because I want to run it with the normal repositories. We run Ubuntu, and I see Paul Waters there frowning. But I want it, whether it's Red Hat or Ubuntu, doesn't matter.
Paul Waters. I thought Bind 9 actually added support for PKCS 11.
It's not complete, and it doesn't work. We have discussed it. I think this is something that you want to discuss with Rick and Vicky. They have had some email exchanges. As you all know, I'm a gynecologist. I don't understand the deeper stuff on this. And I'm not an obstetrician anymore, by the way. The insurance is to become too expensive. But these details, these There is a reason why ISC cannot put it into their routine tree in a way that works on that smart card. Some cards work, but that one doesn't, because it doesn't implement a full spectrum or something. If you want to discuss about it, talk to Rick and to Vicky. They have exchanged email, and I'm not the person I'm dealing with this. I find the reason from both sides to put it in and from ISC not to put it in reasonably compelling. Okay, we then looked at OpenDNSSEC. It's not part of the standard Ubuntu 12.4 or 14.4, but Andre Suri, who we know very well, retains a very good repository, so you just plug that in, run, push the button, and it comes in there. It also needs OpenSC. The interesting thing is 14.0 comes with Ubuntu 14.4. Ubuntu 12.4, which we run in the production machine, comes with 13.4, which doesn't really work so well yet. Recently, 0.15 has come out, which I've compiled on my home machine, works exactly like that. Then we come to the problem. The daemon on the Ubuntu that talks to the reader, not to the card, but to the reader, is called PCSCD, and that's a bit of a nuisance. You can have SQLite and MySQL. I find MySQL works a little bit better. There is a significant learning curve. It took me about a week to figure out which words on the card you must put in the token label. It was not easy. I've put the exact strings that come on the default. If you just put the keys in the card, it gets this label smart card HSM and user pin, and that's what you must put in that particular way exactly into the configuration file. But I think I have heard I'm not alone in struggling with this XML stuff. Then the RRSeq validity surprised me occasionally because it's much shorter than I expected. The cards, we tried three different cards. My cleaning lady could toss it around when she cleaned the place. There's a desktop standing next to my desk. It fell on the ground. Usually excuses the dog eats it. No problem. No contact problem whatsoever. I'd never had an issue. But this reader daemon, that PCSCD that looks at the reader, not at the card, that stopped working all the time. It didn't crash. It didn't go zombie. It just didn't respond anymore. We tried different readers, we tried different cards from the same brand. We couldn't find what's going on. We haven't spoken to the developers now. Diego and I have spoken about it, so he will reproduce exactly my setup and run it on his hardware. Maybe it's a hardware issue of the USB setup that I have. Maybe I must buy me a new computer. It's a bit elderly. I don't know. If he can reproduce the same problem on his machine, then it's not a hardware issue. Then we should go talk to the people to maybe that they can reproduce the same thing and try to find out where the issue is so that they can find the thing and then they can fix it. Then, of course, OpenDNSSEC failed to find. I had short RSEC validity, and whoop, my email wasn't working, and my son started to squeal because the girlfriends couldn't communicate. So I had to... Yeah, some of them even most of them use Facebook nowadays, but some even use email. Then I wrote a heartbeat script, which figured out at least where the problem was, but of course you can't kill your daemons in production on a regular basis and run a ccTLD on that. And my last slide is the interesting, so sort of the weekend before Julie pressurized me into submitting my presentation, and I even got an extension, so. I found a link on Google, so Warren is my friend here. Somebody in the Netherlands has used PowerDNS and the smart card and find that there is an experimental feature. I haven't played with this yet, I will, but it is probably possible to run a stealth server on a different port which pulls the data out of CocaTool. CocaTools has support for PowerDNS in already, so there isn't much configuration to do. And then notify the master on the proper name server and push that. It may be what the doctor ordered. I personally would much more prefer to see OpenDNSSEC pull out all this daemon stuff, pull this all out, leave it for the people who have got times on their hand to play with this and to look after crashing software all the time, but get just the pure signing program that you can plug it into a shell script and then be the master of your own destiny by controlling exactly each step, and if it fails, then you know it, and do manual rollover of the keys once a year or whatever, how often you do it, but you are sort of involved in every step of the way. So it failed, but we are having a plan. That's it.
Thank you so much, Everhart. As always, very interesting presentation. We'll try to collect up the questions for the end. And our next presenter is Robert Martin League, who is going to tell us about the PCH signing service. Robert.
Thank you, Russ. I will say my name probably once at least. I try to avoid the troubles. I'm Robert Martin Lechen. It's a French name, and I'm not, so I probably screwed it up too.
I don't feel so bad then.
I was asked to give a little talk about the DNSSEC signing service that PCH has for primarily ccTLDs. This is not so much a new thing. We've actually had it since 2011. We introduced it in ICANN Singapore in 2011, and since then we have signed up almost 40 TLDs to use the platform, and that's 40 TLDs that use it in production, where they actually have the DS in the root zone. So we do sign for more zones, but some of them are maybe in extended tests, or that just never got around to do more about it. Next slide, please. Right. So the PCH signing service uses key ceremonies like the ones that ICANN performs. We don't have the same amount of register representatives that comes in every now and then, but we do have external witnesses. We do have notaries. If somebody wants to come, they're very welcome to participate, but as everybody has learned by now, the key ceremonies are not the most entertaining thing in the world. So, if somebody comes by one of our locations, they're welcome to join. We do about three or four of these a year, depending on demand. Sadly, that the effect of this is that if somebody needs a domain name signed, we need to know the name to put it into the key ceremony, because part of the things you generate in the key ceremony, well, you need to put the domain name in some signatures. So, we cannot pre-generate a lot of keys and just use them as we want. So the keys, as I think everybody here knows or should know, is they are stored in a hardware signing module. It's one of those big boxes that Eberhard wants, and they are not cheap. That's true. They perform really well. We use also the same as ICANN does, I think, and as many others do, the AES Keeper. When you create the way we have configured it, you cannot extract the keys once you create them. So you create the keys inside the HSM. You hope that it's a random key. You have to trust that it's not breakable, because we are not really able to tell if it's a valid certification. So we trust FIPS able to do that. The platform has been certified to FIPS 144 level 4. Is that 144 or 142? Okay, so anyway, it's the highest certification you can get for an HSM, and the root zone does the same. When we do the keys, we used to do 2K KSKs and 1K ZSKs, but recently we switched to, because of some discussion on some mailing lists, we realized that there wasn't really any reason not to do 4K and 2K. So now we doubled the key sizes for each one of them, and that's also the recommendations that we are giving to DNSSEC partners that want to do their own signing. The 4K is supposed to be a little bit more burdensome for Resolver to work with, but we believe that you only need to validate the KSK once before it expires, depending on how your cache is configured. So we trust that's something people can live with without getting too upset. In terms of security, we think it's a valuable trade-off. And on the same note, I think the route should also go up. Right. I have some. So we use NSEC 3 with opt-out, which most TLD does. The reason for this is that many of the domain names in TLD is absolutely insecure. There's no DS record that secures it, so you can skip a lot of signatures, and your zone size actually becomes very manageable in that sense. So we use NSEC 3. We only sign what needs to be signed, Bind does for us. The disadvantage of NSEC 3, of course, is that it's extremely difficult to debug the first few months you're trying to figure out what those hashes mean. Another thing is that some companies believe in security through obscurity, and if you don't use NSEC 3 but use NSEC instead, then you can use zone walking, and people are not too pleased with that. So, part of the service, we also have we automatically roll the keys. Usually, every just about 6 weeks, we roll the ZSK. And the KSK, we don't really plan to roll, but we probably roll it every 5 years. That's what we have been kind of hinting that we would do. So I expect we'll be doing that, but it requires a lot of coordination with the TLDs. So we, like Eberhard, we sign with the bind, and not old bind, but old enough. Because we know that it works. We have a lot of experience using that now, and as long as there's no reason to upgrade for security reasons, I think we will stick with that. Next slide. Right, so how do you get onto a platform like ours, or I suppose it's much the same for many others that would provide the same service. Basically, we would transfer the zone from your hidden primary, and we would sign it, and we would verify that the data is valid, and then we would be sending it back to you, or you could tell your secondaries to pull it directly from us. And finally, of course, we can also add it to our Anycast servers if you are interested in that. I mean, the Anycast service, PCH, is very known for the Anycast service in the CCTLD community, since we have many nodes and many happy TLDs. But those things are not connected. We can easily sign and hand it back to you and not tell anyone that we are signing your data. If you want it to be a secret, that's fine. So what does the next slide would be good. Thank you. So the CCTLD, what a CCTLD really needs to worry about if somebody else takes over the signing is that they need to collect the DS records from the children that are interested in that. And usually that requires some kind of modification to the database, some user interface, or maybe some scripts that goes out and fetches something. But in reality, what we are seeing is that the take-up so far is slow enough that you can use a file that you just include manually and maintain that by hand. And if somebody needs a change, well, then you do have some manual process. And you can do that until you get tired of it, and then you will eventually automate it. And that seems to be working for many TLDs. So I recommend that approach. And in the meantime, you would get a lot of a feel about how DNSSEC works, and you try to verify keys and everything. So getting on a DNSSEC platform until you're ready to sign yourself is a good way of getting familiarity with it and getting a soft approach to the learning curve of DNSSEC, because, well, it's like DNS is extremely simple until something breaks. I mean, if you do every single step correct, it's okay. But if one of them fails, then it's sometimes a little bit difficult to clean up. We are happy to work with the registries to help them with their own DNSSEC signing service if they want to do their own. I talked to a regional CCTLD just yesterday, and they were very, very eager to hear what we had to say on that. So that's part of PCH's mission, is to go over time also, apparently, is to help strengthen the internet infrastructure of the different countries. So I have much more to say. Okay, so I will ask for the next slide, and there's a map of the world, and we are everywhere.
No, you're not in Windhoek.
Oh, okay, we are not in all parts of Africa and Antarctica. Right, so what we have is we have three locations where we have HSMs, and we can sign in Europe, and we can sign in the US, and we can sign in in Singapore. The Singapore facility is a key ceremony facility where we do not actually sign with ZSK until we really have to. I mean, it is a possibility, but we mainly use it for a KSK signing facility, and the other facilities can be used for either. Next. Right. Okay. So, a quick sales pitch. We do Anycast DNS, and we have more than 250 TLDs on our platform and more than 100 locations around the world. We are very happy to install new nodes at any IXP that we consider an open and fair IXP. We connect directly to the IXP. We connect to every ISP without sitting behind some other AS. We might connect to a route server if there's one. And if there's no IXP close to you, we will be happy to help creating one. We do that many times, and we even donate equipment. I think that's it. Questions or none? Later.
Well, I think we'll try to do the questions all together at the end. Thank you very much, Robert. And next we'll go to Joe Walden from VeriSign.
Thanks, Russ. So I'm Joe Walden from VeriSign. I'm responsible for the registry product management within our registry business. The DNSSEC signing service that I'm going to talk about is something that, like PCH, is a tool that we implemented many years ago when we were first going through the processes to sign the root, as well as .com, .net, and the other top-level domains that we manage. We realize, as you look at the whole ecosystem, that it does add a lot of complexity to the DNS that at one point, prior to implementing DNSSEC, if you look at it as a fire and forget system, once you implement DNSSEC, it's no longer fire and forget. It adds a lot more complexity, and it makes the DNS more brittle. So how do we help the registrants implement this? So rather, as kind of complementary to helping TLDs sign, this is really a service focused at the registrant level for the domain name management. Can we go to the next slide? So this is a service that is really a cloud-based architecture that takes unsigned zones that registrants have, working through their registrars to opt into the service and signs those zones. And it's intended to be to make the process as simple as possible. So it's a one-time configuration, and then we manage the signing and re-signing and updates going forward. So you can see some of the features, I guess, in terms of signing the zone. And I'll show that, I think, on the diagram on the next slide. I'm more visual, so this helps be a little bit clearer. So registrant in a typical registration goes to a registrar that will register a domain name and then create an unsigned zone. In this model, I'm assuming that the registrar is providing that hosting, but that is really not necessary. It could be hosted through any third party. And then that unsigned zone is then what would be available in the public DNS. So what our service allows is that registrar to have the registrant make one configuration, which essentially opens up a access through their firewall so that we can access that zone file. We bring it into our signing service. We have all of the standard HSMs and signing processes. We sign it within our data centers and then ship back to that signed zone master a signed zone. And then we monitor the service throughout the life cycle of the domain name. So we regularly go back and check and see if there are updates, anything that requires re-signing. If that's required, then we update those signatures that are required, and then that keeps the zone updated and current. So from the registrant perspective, they don't have to worry about how they're managing all of that, all of the mechanics on the back end in order to take advantage of DNSSEC. So go to the next slide. So this is really, again, intended to help address that perception that implementing DNSSEC is difficult. It does add complexity to the management of domain names, and that was an objective of ours to overcome that for both registrars that were going to be providing those DNSSEC services as well as their customers, so that they would have the ability to take advantage of the additional security features, as well as some of the other services that will rely on DNSSEC. And I know Danny McPherson, our Chief Security Officer, is going to talk about DANE later this afternoon as one of those services. So implementing DNSSEC really is an enabler for other opportunities. We wanted to make that as simple as possible. And again, if some of these issues that a registrant would face in managing the DNSSEC themselves, if you have a failure, it becomes very difficult to diagnose and troubleshoot. So this really takes that out of their hands and makes it as easy as possible for the registrant to manage that. And we go to the next slide. So just in summary, this is a service that we decided at the very beginning to offer for free to our registrars. Registrars can include this in a hosting package and implement that in any of the services that they're providing to their registrants. It is available for free. I will say, in full disclosure, that the adoption rate is very, very low. Many registrars don't offer DNSSEC. Many registrars, if they do offer DNSSEC, don't provide these tools. But these are available, and we're trying to make that as simple as possible, as I keep saying. But I think that it really is a challenge to get the demand for this type of security, and the complexity that is expected in implementing DNSSEC is one of those obstacles. So again, we're going to continue to offer this service. I think that as more applications come online that expect and rely on DNSSEC, that we'll see more adoption. But it is something that if anyone is interested, you can contact me directly or the URL or the email address that's there. And we've also published the DPS URL if you're interested in some of the technical specifications of how we're managing the service. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Joe and Robert and Eberhard, very much. We have left specifically time for questions in this session, so please start looking at and walking up to the mic with the questions that you might have. But while people are doing that, I have one to sort of kick it off. And that is, Eberhard's presentation was really kind of focused in and getting a hardware-based solution for anybody or everybody or the common man, so to speak, where what I heard from Robert and Joe was more focused at, you know, higher levels in the organization. And I was wondering if Robert or Joe would comment on whether or not your service is available to an individual zone holder if they wanted to come to you and ask for this service.
Hi. Yeah. We do offer signing for other TLDs if you're interested. We don't only do it for CCTLDs, but the take-up time is, because it requires a key ceremony, it's going to take a little while to get onto the service, right? Whereas when you use probably soft keys, it's a little bit faster.
Go ahead, Eberhard.
Two things. I noticed you greeted us as gentlemen and Eberhard. It's not the first time that has happened. One of my colleagues in the hospital always comes to the tea room in the hospital and says, gentlemen, ladies, and Dr. Lisse. And I also must say, PCH has an Anycast node in Windhoek since about a week or so, or 2 weeks or so, so it wasn't really true that I was saying they were not there. Now I forgot what I was going to say.
You were going to talk about key sizes on the card.
Yeah, I was also saying we do our top level, the .na ourselves, but the second level, com.na and net.na, which has about five, net.na has about five zones, they do for, PCH does for us, and that works very well. Com.na has got about 2,000 peanuts, but even smaller zones. I think the workload for PCH, like you said, is the same. Go, put it in the queue, get it done, and I fully agree with what you said. If we want to push acceptance, we need to find a way also for the end users, the banks, and so on, to actually do this at a low cost.
Yeah, the signing service that we provide is available through registrars. We don't have any mechanism for end users to come directly to us. I realize that there are cases where you have hosting providers or individuals who may have a difficult time working through their registrars just because of some of the tools, especially if you're looking at larger volumes. And I know there's some work going on to try to address that shortcoming. But right now, we're just exclusively providing that through the registrars.
Okay, great.
Two questions. First one for Jacques Latour with Dautier. So first question for Robert Martin Lejeune. That's how you pronounce your name. Just saying. Is it free, your service?
Which one of them?
Your DNSSEC signing.
Oh, the DNSSEC signing? For CCTLDs, it's for free. For new GTLDs, it's
expensive.
We haven't charged anyone yet, but the price currently is zero.
Okay.
So, yeah, it might see some inflation in terms of, for country codes, it is free, and it will remain free.
Okay. Second question for Joe. In terms of your signing service, how do you handle the DS record? How does it make its way back to .com? And is that the challenge you're having? Or?
So the registrant still has to take the DS record back to their registrar to have that entered into the registry. We can only take updates to the COM registry or any GTLD registry from registrars. So the registrant still has to take that back.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
So what I understand is that since the signing service is not directly connected to the registry, it seems that it's a kind of generic service. Why can't you engage directly with any customer of any TLD instead of having to go through the registrar channel? Why is that?
Well, to get the DS record into the registry still requires a mod that's processed by the registrar to get that entry into the COM registry, so it'll be in the zone file. But you're right, it is independent. I will say that there is one TLD that is not a gTLD that we're working with, where we have completely integrated that, where it is all done at once within the registry. So it really, there are some options, but there are also some restrictions just because of the registrar model requirements that we have within ICANN.
So is the requirement a documented fact? Does it say that it needs to go, the DS has to go through the registrant? Or is it something that we all assume it's like that?
Well, so it would work the same as whether you're using our service or any other signing service. The registrant will still have the requirement to provide that. If the registrar is doing it all themselves, then the registrar is handling that, right? So that's why if we're offering the service through the registrar, typically the registrar will handle that complexity because the registrar is offering the signing service, the registrar manages the customer relationship, and the registrar is passing the EPP transactions to us.
Okay, thanks.
So this is a very interesting topic, and I think one of the reasons that may have been also driving Jacques' questions here was at the last ICANN meeting, DNSSEC workshop in Singapore, we had a panel that was trying to discuss and address and get the discussion going about how can we make progress for some of the DNS service providers, some of the large service providers, Cloudflare and Akamai, and not their content providing side, but their DNS providing right. side, to be able to accommodate this challenge of having the need to get the signed information into the registry and done perhaps in a way that doesn't follow exactly the current established traditional model. Have any of the three of you thought about that problem at all? And if you have, would you comment about it, please?
I haven't thought about it because we have no clients. Yeah, but I feel you have to have your house in order before you can start going for clients. The market that in Namibia is extremely small. We have a total of 3,800 domain names and perhaps 10 banks. And if I go to the bank, I want to be able to say what we're doing without being laughed out of the room. And so, therefore, I first see to get that we get the infrastructure properly working. And then, for us, it's a small thing. Coca Tools has got facilities. We can do it automated, but it's so few, we can do it manually. It's not a bother.
Yeah, so I would say that we have thought about this, and I think that there's a bit of a chicken and egg issue here. One is to have some mechanism for a non-registrar to be able to update authoritative right. records within the registry right. is not a trivial task within this community. This mm-hmm. is a change to the existing registrar paradigm. And where we see an opportunity that has such low volume, that's a tough issue to take to the GNSO to tackle an issue when they've got, you know, a very full schedule of things to work on. So if there's demand, I think that helps build the case. But I think that's probably the biggest obstacle that I see right now.
Interesting that you mentioned the volume aspect, and clearly that's something that needs to be considered. At the panel last time, some of the participants in the panel were talking in terms of millions of names. Mm-hmm. So the quantity of activities at this point that want to do this may not be extremely large themselves, but the quantity of names that at least they're claiming yep. that they're handling is very, very large. So just I wanted to stimulate a little discussion on that. Jaap.
Jaap Akkerhuis, Enelnet Labs. And what? Yeah, it's on, I guess. It's on. And this part of the discussion reminds me of an attempt from people from Oliver Kutensen and friends of Cloudflare, which also want for other people to deal with just the DNS records. I mean, so what this actually boils down to is that there has always been a silent partner in the Redis-Redistrand relationship, and that is actually the DNSSEC, the DNS operator. I mean, it's not necessarily that Redistra is also the DNS operator or the other way around. And this is coming to attention to more people in more occasions. And there is actually some push trying to see whether this can recognize and the system can change, and it will be much easier to do that.
This is Julie Headland, and I have a question from the Adobe Connect chat room. This question is from Brett, and Brett asks, do VeriSign publish a list of registrars that support their DNSSEC signing service?
I don't believe we have one published.
Thank you very much, Joe.
It looks as though the line has subsided. Anyone else have any questions that they want to ask? Robert.
Hi, Eberhard. I want to know if you have any experience with different key sizes on those smart cards. Is that something that can go beyond 1K or 2K? How much can they handle?
I must say Diego Espinosa has left the building, so I don't know. But this you can look up. This is we are experimenting very early. I think at the moment we do 2K, 2,000. But I think it can do 4,000, but I'm not sure what the speed implications are.
Probably
but
ahead.
Yeah, they with 1,000 you can do 5 signings or 8 signings a second, and with 2,000 you can do 2 a second. So if you take 4... then you can go and take a coffee and smoke when they do the sign.
Okay. Yeah.
But for the it doesn't matter, because if it's for a small company or for a small, really small TLD, really doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just for some TLDs that don't care about the big HSMs, sometimes I recommend that they start out with a smart card, at least for the KSK.
Hey, it's Rick Lamb. I was wondering, Eberhard, if you had a chance to look at any of the ECC support on those cards, because I think those cards, they claim they support elliptic stuff as well. Have you played with that at all? No? All right. Yeah, thanks. Those are really great cards.
I first would like to figure out why it's crashing and find a solution to that. Yeah, but I must also say this work has depended a lot on, and you see it on my presentation, on work that Rick has done. And it's in production. For example, you can use key bundles that you can generate key bundles with these smart cards and use that, and that's being used, for example, at nic.cr. So there is really a wide spectrum of possibilities for very little cost.
Well, if we have no more questions, I think it may be time for a great DNSSEC quiz. But before we do that, I want to thank all three of our panelists for a very interesting and stimulating discussion.
Since I recall the embarrassment from my last participation at the great DNSSEC quiz, may I be excused?
Paul, I think you're up now.
And just a note, so you should have on your chair a form where you can fill in answers for the quiz, assuming you want to play. And I did notice just now that the form has space for 12 answers. There's only 10 questions. I guess you can always, try for extra credit or something like that. But at any rate, please find one of these. There's probably some extra ones around. In fact, I see extra ones around on the chairs. So go ahead and get your answer sheet ready, and then I'll bring up the quiz. And I'm going to actually, if you'll give me a moment, Paul, I need to let folks in the Adobe Connect room know that we're doing this and that they can't really participate remotely. But, you know, at least they'll be able to see it.
Okay, so welcome everybody to the Great DNSSEC quiz. This is the first time I'm doing this. Depending on how it goes, it might be my last time doing this. So I slightly deviated from the rules, not very much, so people who are comfortable with the previous rules will quickly follow up. So I guess you all have to do this on an empty stomach. I thought we were doing this during lunch, but... So I guess I'll make it quick. Okay, so next slide, the rules. Nope, sorry, one back. The rules, so these are all same as before. Use the forum, put your name on the forum. When you're done answering, find someone next to you and they will go through the questions and evaluate it. You get points. So next slide. So sometimes there's more than one good answer to a question, like an A record. You can have multiple answers that are all valid. So you score a point for every valid question that you put in. However, just like lame delegations, if you have one lame delegation, if you have one correct answer, you score nothing for that question. Like, you're either have a lame delegation or not. So be careful. You might want to not guess too many parts of a question if you want to score some points on it. And then one last preamble slide. I found that the previous times when I was here that it was a bit unfair. So to level the playing field a little bit, I decided to hand out some handicaps. You know, when you play Go, you get like stone handicaps. And I remember at high school, I got like 9 stone handicaps against my teacher and still lost. So -1 point if you're on the DNS Ops mailing list. -1 point if you ever had or have an ICANN.org email address. -1 point if you have root access on a TLD server. -1 point if you're a listed author on a DNS RFC. And -1 point if you've ever used the NS lookup host command in the last 5 years. And I have to say, this has been obsoleted for 10 years or more now, so you should really stop using it. So this is a point you really shouldn't have. Okay, so up to -5 points for people. Okay, question number one. Next slide, please. Which of the following are true? The key SIG DEL RR types were replaced by the DNS key RR SIG and DS RR type. Second question. Many countries have legal requirements that require DNSSEC to always use the RFC 5155 opt-out. And C. Dig, Drill, Unbind and Bound, Delve and Knot are names of open source DNS software. And D, every key with a set bit set in a valid trust chain must have a corresponding DS record published. So I'll give like a minute for people to think about these questions. And no one's cursing yet, so it's good. Okay. Okay, so we'll go to the next question, question two. Which of the following situations could lead to a DNSSEC validation failure? Expired RRSECs? a melted HSM card, are RSICs that are only valid an hour from now, a disk full on your signer machine, or a cable cut causing identical backup DNS servers to take over DNS resolution. Okay, so next slide, question number 3. Which were the first DNSSEC signed countries on each continent? And for the record, I used continent as in how Wikipedia defines a continent, which is, might not be the correct way of doing it. So I won't read all the names, but according to Wikipedia, there are 7 continents, and so which of these... I already noticed a little bit of an issue because on a previous slide earlier in the morning I saw that one of these countries listed was listed on a different continent. So I blame Wikipedia on that. Okay, next slide. Is Joe Abley in the room or not? Did he leave? Is he still here? He left? Okay, good. How many times has the root KSK visibly changed, excluding any TTL changes? And never once, twice, or 3 times. La 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 la. Okay, next slide. We're halfway through. Which of these TLDs was signed before the root but is no longer a signed TLD? Dot test, dot UM, dot example, dot AQ, or E164.ARPA? Okay, next slide. When deleting a delegation from a zone, what should be done with its glue records? Remove the glue if not used by any other zones. Remove the glue regardless of other zones. Keep the glue and do not sign it. Keep the glue and sign it. And remember, more than one answer could be right. Okay, next slide. Did the well-known OpenSSL random Debian bug impact DNSSEC? No, because DNSSEC signed zones are served statically. Yes, and various TLDs had to perform emergency rollovers. C, no, because OpenDNSSEC and Bind do not use OpenSSL to generate keys. Or D, yes, about 65 vulnerable keys were found, but none in TLDs. Next slide. What was the .nl.nl zone? Was it the first DNSSEC TLD zone? A missing dot leading to a large DNSSEC outage? An early experiment that took the NL domain and republished it using DNSSEC? Or an active delegated zone owned by Olaf Kaltman who uses it for IDF DNSSEC experiments? I don't know what it is with Dutch people and DNS. I don't know how we ended up being so overly represented. That's nothing to do with water. Okay, next slide. Which one of these DNS keys will work best on resolvers throughout the world? And I'm clearly not going to read out these blobs. remember the word one is highlighted in bold for a reason. So on this question, you can only have one good answer. And then the last question, for those people who think that they've not done so well up until now, this is where you can score really a lot of points. Because each good answer is 1 point. Which TLDs were signed before the route was signed? And now Wes is looking up. So do the next slide just for Wes. So this, I will give like a couple of minutes because clearly everybody has to go through the atlas and figure out. Anyone still guessing, or has everybody settled down on like giving up? Okay, so the answers. Next slide, please. Sorry? Oh, yeah, sorry. You should swap your paper with a trusted person next to you. You should probably also don't forget your handicap, so maybe write your handicap on your slide as well so we can discount those points properly. Okay, so the first question, which of the following were true? None of the answers are correct. So if you have none of the answers, you get 1 point. I went to a teacher's college. So I sort of learned to be mean to my students on tests. That's right. Second question. Which of the following situations could lead to a DNSSEC validation failure? All of these have happened to TLDs. And I'll explain the last one. The last one, the TLD automatically switched over to their backup DNS servers and somehow they got their DO bits stripped out of their answers. So even though the machines were identical, the transport was still mangled enough that it didn't work. So 1 point for each answer, yeah. So you can score 5 points on this question. Next question. If anyone has a question or thinks I'm wrong, you should definitely interrupt me. Okay, go back one slide. So you're sort of saying if I'm walking, I can't get into a car accident.
The moderator is the final authority in this game.
Okay, next slide. So this is the slide I feared most because I might be wrong. I think not. But so clearly someone earlier demonstrated and said that Puerto Rico was actually not in North America but in either Central or South America. So I am definitely not an expert on this. I used Wikipedia to determine if it was North America or not. And it told me it was North America. So someone who edits Wikipedia should update this then. So if that's the case, if Puerto Rico is wrong, then I guess the The first one in North America would be .us, I think, Ed?
I think so.
Yeah? So if you had none of these because you thought US was the one, then you'll also get a point. Next slide. How many times has the root KSK visibly changed? 3 times is the correct answer. Did anyone say 3 times? Wes said 3 times. Wes remembered the outage on January 10 when the root key briefly revealed itself by accident and then quickly masked itself again to all zeros. Okay, next question. This was the midway question, which, in case you read the title, was a dead giveaway because the answer is B, midway. I was tracking this because this was one of the first ones when I was still doing my Google-based DNSSEC maps, and at some point it just vanished. I was like, what went wrong? And then I talked to a few people, and they told me, yeah, just don't talk about this too much. Let's just forget about this. So, not when I checked it a couple of days ago. Really? No, you're getting an NSEC.
Fair enough.
The root validates, but you're getting an NSEC because the entire domain doesn't exist. Okay, next one. What to do with Glue? Basically, people haven't decided what the best solutions are, so all questions except C is right. Like, obviously, if you keep the glue in your zone and there's no more delegation, you're obliged to sign it. So you can score 3 points on this question. No disagreement here, okay. Okay, next question. The random effect, the OpenSSL bug. So apparently 65 keys were indeed found that were weak. But as far as I could trace back, there were no TLDs with it. No corrections from people, no TLDs, so it's actually right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, next question. The NL and L zone was the early experiment where they actually took a TLD, copied it under the .nl.nl zone, and then signed it. This was still back in the days when I was living in Nijmegen, far, actually close to SIDN, and we did the NLNL signing. With the old records still, this was still with the key and the SIG records. Okay, next question. Okay, so anyone agrees? Anyone disagrees? I'm open for arguments. But I'd like to see if someone can tell me why D is wrong. Yes, it doesn't start with AW. That is a very good observation. Do you know what that means? That is incorrect. It validates fine, but it will use a little bit more CPU because it's actually using a larger exponent, public exponent. And Google doesn't validate the larger exponent. So for Google DNS, it doesn't validate. So there's no reason it shouldn't fail more, but because Google doesn't support it, it actually will fail more. Warren was in another meeting, I think. I was safe there. And then the last big question. So let's see how many mistakes I made here. So CL, I'm not sure if they actually managed to win or not because it was on the same day that the root was signed, according to my data. So I don't know if they win or not. So you can have them.
Which TLD is PTR?
PTR?
It's on your slot.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, no, there must be. Yeah, no, sorry, that's Puerto Rico. That should be PR. Yes. So if you have PR, it counts as a point. If you have PTR, it does not count as a point. Did I miss any TLDs? Any claims? Okay, so then you have all the questions. So you can add them all up. So next slide, give you the scorecard. If you're from minus 5 to 0, you're a DNSSEC skeptic. On the other side of the spectrum, if you have anywhere between 32 and 37 points, it means that you scored a perfect score, yet you get no handicap to start with. So you're extremely lazy. You know everything, but you've not written an RFC. You're not on any of the mailing list. So, and I should really want to be in the section 1 to 4, which means you're really enjoying the world out there. And so do we have any DNSSEC ninja? Well, I guess no procrastinators, right? No? Any ninjas? DNSSEC ninjas? No? Any DNSSEC historians? Oh, dear. Good thing I kept all those names so positive. DNSSEC experts? Oh, DNSSEC enthusiasts? I don't agree with the titles. DNSSEC users? One? So all DNSSEC fans then, at least. Okay, well, thanks, and if you don't hit me too much, I might do this again next time.
So we have lunch now. I think we should let the winner get to lunch first. What do you think? Along with Paul. At lunch, we'll go for an hour. It'll go until 1:30. And so please go ahead and help yourself. And thank you very much.
And I just want to say thanks to Paul for stepping up to go and do this. So. Maybe next time lose the Dutch answers, though, you know, or something.